And now, here is Dr. Coben with today's edition of Liberty Minute.
Mothers who kill their kids. This is Dr. John Coben with Liberty Minutes. Many folks in the upcountry of South Carolina remember the dreadful tale of Susan Smith, who, in 1994, drowned her kids, strapped in child car restraint seats, by driving her car into Lake Long in Union County. That tragedy made national headlines, and the legacy of mentally ill mothers who hurt or kill their children has not ended in South Carolina. On Sunday, July 29, 2007, Sameta Haywood of Hanahan near North Charleston slow-cooked her children in a car, bathed them, and then neatly wrapped them up in trash bags. She had left them in her Chevrolet Cavalier for 8 hours, from 3 p.m. to 11:45 p.m., while she worked at a residential daycare facility named Dana House. The children were likely already dead before she bagged them. But South Carolina is not alone in hosting this maternal calamity. There is a nationwide crisis of mentally ill women deliberately hurting or killing their children. Consider some of the sad tales from across the nation. Bipolar Hawaiian teen Julia Lewis decapitated her infant in 2006. Kansas City physician Deborah Green, M.D., burned her children in their home and poisoned her husband in 1995. Los Angeles resident Ophelia Yip drove her children off a pier in 1991. Boston's Angela Vasquez stabbed her kids in 2007. Houston's Andrea Yates drowned her children in a bathtub in 2001. In Hudson Oak, the Fort Worth area, Dieta Perez shot her children in 2002, later followed by Gilberta Estrada, also from Hudson Oaks, hanging hers in 2007. Tyler, Texas's Deanna Laney stoned her kids in 2003. Oakland's LaShawn Harris fed her children to sharks in San Francisco Bay in 2005. McKinney, Texas's Dina Schlossler amputated the arms of her child and offered him to God in 2004. Dayton, Ohio's China Arnold microwaved her infant in 2005. Rachel Summers of Murfreesboro, Tennessee, poisoned her kids in 2007, and Ocean City, Maryland's Christy Freeman, recently in 2007, was found to have killed and bagged up her last four infants. By all accounts, these 15 women seemed normal up to the point that they snapped and killed their children. Perhaps the scariest thing is what family courts are doing about the problem. On account of HIPAA regulations, which protect patients' mental illness records, and shrewd and clever lawyers who are able to protect their clients' psychiatric histories from being disclosed to judges, many mothers with mental problems are gaining custody of their children. Imagine if you were a judge and Dr. Deborah Green, prior to her crime, showed up in your court. You would be tempted to think that awarding custody to a medical doctor with a fine reputation in your community would be a good idea. Why would you doubt such a woman without any psychiatric history to dissuade you? Yet if you only knew about the good doctor's psychiatric problems, the probability of harm coming to the child, witness the aforementioned examples, might give you more than just a little pause before you awarded her full custody. Economists have recognized for years that judges, whether elected or appointed, face the same economic incentives that other people do. They want to minimize their expected costs from any action they take and simultaneously maximize their expected benefits. When it comes to the family court, where judges' dockets are terribly overloaded and full, and accurate justice is therefore hard to come by, it is unlikely that a judge in any given divorce case will care less about either the husband or the wife. He is mostly interested in playing it safe with the children involved so that they are put in the best possible situation. Of course, there might be the isolated case where the judge favors one spouse over the other because her lawyer just happens to be the judge's best golf buddy, but such bias must be rare, we hope. Accordingly, family court judges do not want to become responsible for making the mistake of granting custody to a seemingly normal woman that might become the next Deborah Green, Andrea Yates, or Julia Lewis of South Carolina. That means that family court judges do not want to be in the news. They want to advance their career as the public appreciates them and as their superiors recognize their extraordinary abilities. Hence, the last thing they need is to be the notorious judge who inanely gave custody of the children to a Susan Smith or a Sameta Haywood. Consequently, when medical records are presented in court that indicate a mother's impressively scary driving speeding record, problems with bipolar disease, depression, and suicidal ideation, and perhaps a history of violence, like once attempting to stab her husband, A judge is going to think long and hard before he awards custody of children to the mother. Even professional standing will not matter. Like Deborah Green, the fact that a mother is a physician does not make her immune to the possibility of her mental problems turning into tragedy in the lives of her children. Indeed, high professional status only dramatizes the gap that can exist between appearance and reality in this matter. Anne Rule, author of Bitter Harvest, A Woman's Fury, A Mother's Sacrifice in 1999, remarks about Dr. Deborah Green's demeanor. Inside her family home, she had temper tantrums, turned her children against her husband, and seemed determined to destroy her marriage. Most of these people, like Green, present a fairly sound mask to the world. They don't snap, they just get worse. And do any of us know wives and mothers who exhibit this sort of bitchy behavior? If we do, perhaps we should take notice of it and heed the warning signs before disaster happens. Perusing news stories on the internet regarding mothers with mental problems who harm their children provides more alarming information. Friends and onlookers of the murderous mothers commonly state that they thought the women were great moms, and that they had no idea that they would be capable of barbarous acts against their kids. Another alarming fact: the leading cause of death in children under age 4 is homicide by a parent, as pointed out by Kelly Sons in her internet article, Why Some Mothers Kill Their Children in 2007. Usually the mother acting alone or in cahoots with her boyfriend. There are hundreds of such cases every year in America, most of which are reported only locally. In Why Mothers Kill, a Forensic Psychologist's Casebook, 2006, Jeffrey McKee notes that 85% of all slain children for the past 4 decades were under age 6. Of the average 256 child slayings each year from 1976 to 2000, 61% were murdered by their parents, about one half by their mothers, and another 23% were murdered by a male acquaintance of the mother, or 53% of total child murders. And the situation is worsening. 390 children were killed by their mothers in 2001. That's over one child murdered per day. Depression and related mental illnesses like bipolar disorder are key warning signals for impending trouble. In Mothers Who Kill Their Children, Understanding the Acts of Moms from Susan Smith to the Prom Mom, published in 2001, Cheryl Meyer and Michelle Oberman state, in general, depressed mothers have more thoughts of harming their child than do non-depressed mothers, particularly when the father does not reside with the mother. Maybe it's time that all of us paid closer attention to this problem. Susan Smith was really not an anomaly. Neither was Sumedha Haywood. And we should not be surprised if tragedy happens again in South Carolina, so long as people and maybe even some family court judges or child care workers tend to overlook the severity and significance of mental illness in the lives of many American mothers. And this has been Dr. John Coben with Liberty Minutes. To find out more about Liberty Minutes, visit www.policyofliberty.net.